The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now and live in full technical, if you want to check out the video, of course, it's worth checking out just for my shirt and Paul's dapper look and his aura, which you can't see in the audio. You've got an aura around him, Paul, an aura of energy and passion for investing. You know, fella.
Yeah, I'm particularly excited today because it's my last day of work. I've actually got a holiday for the first time for 8 years.
That's good.
And I'm treating myself to go around your neck of the woods in South Wales, around Pembrokeshire. So I'm going to enjoy some coastal walks and some bit of crabbing and yeah, mackerel fishing. So it'll be fab.
It's I don't know if you've been there before, but you know, there are parts of West Wales that are stunning. And the only thing that lets you down sometimes is the weather. If you've got the weather there, we go once a year to West Wales, and it's worth going to a place called the Cliff Beach Hotel. And we go with my parents. And literally, we had a couple of good times. We've been there for 6 years on a trot now. But when the weather's good, I've sat there, just sitting overlooking the cliffs and the water. I said to my father, you can't beat this anywhere in the world when the weather's good. It's phenomenal views. And some great places there. I mean, having said that, I went to Tenerife last week with my father because the weather is good there. check out Sion Park if you go there. It's voted number one water park in the world. Phenomenal. The kids went down the Tower of Power, which is straight down through a tube. And I think it goes through an aquarium. But they've got just the scale of the place. It's like there's a beach there with a wave machine that's huge. But overlooking that, I was talking earlier, these villas sort of worth tens of millions just overlooking. And these guys are obviously doing well in the markets. But
it's an interesting sort of like point you raise, really, because we'll use it now for the markets. I mean, I think the weather's changing also at the sort of top level, because yes, we've had absolutely sort of like all negative and all down markets, but there are signs now, early sort of green shoots, that actually the selling is overdone and we're starting to reach a bit of a bottoming process. Certainly on my portfolio, I've had a couple of sort of negative announcements, and actually the shares haven't moved. We mentioned it last time with Aviva, but also with Purple Bricks this week as well. And we saw it with Nvidia, last night as well. What that's saying to me, it reminds me that, you know, the economy and the stock market are not in sync. There's usually a 9 to 12 months lag, and even can be longer for small caps. They can go into a bear market much quicker than the economy can. But equally, they turn and they see sort of the economy not being quite as bad before the economy bottoms, well before the economy bottoms and peak inflation. So I actually think we're reaching that stage where it's a potential inflection point that the market has priced in a severe or as hardest recession as we're possibly going to get. Yeah. And actually the economic data, yes, it still needs to bottom and it still needs to go through some cleansing exercise. But actually, the optimism of investors looking through the lens 9-12 months in advance is telling me that, you know, with stocks now delivering, you know, they deliver some bad news, they don't go down as much. Well, don't seem to be.
Well, I think the markets tend to look, they're looking for news now that's not going to get worse. It doesn't have to get better. It's not going to get any worse. And I think we see inflation. Has it sort of peaked? You know, oil prices have been hanging around this level for a while now, and gas prices. In fact, I've read a good article about Britain is drowning in gas. It's just the infrastructure. They can't reroute it to the places it needs to be in Germany and stuff. We've got enough gas to sell. But yeah, looking at the indices, I mean, I talked about this on my weekly webinar. AIM 100, for example, is down 32% for its low, you know, from its high. The high was on the 6th and 9th, 2021. And I was saying, the great financial crash, it did double that. But I said, and that was when the banking system, the very monetary system we relied on, was, you know, at threat. And I said, is it really as bad as actually gone halfway to that already? Of course, we may have a recession. But now also the narrative changes, isn't it? Because people are saying the Fed now may not go as hard on interest rates and all that stuff. So I think, how far has this got to drop? Because, okay, there's inflation, there's maybe a recession, but we're nowhere near the great financial crash. And we're halfway there. So you're right. When you see a stock now releasing bad news and it doesn't go down, they're probably saying, okay, the news probably isn't going to get any worse now, so it may have to, you know, go along the bottom for a while and then pick back up. But yeah, I think we're close to the bottom. And even looking at the S&P, I was looking at an indicator called the MACD, which is Moving Average Convergence Divergence, and it's really oversold, the RSI, and the MACD sort of crossed, which is called a buy signal, and that hasn't happened for a while. And I said, you may see a bounce here. I'm not saying it's the bottom, but you may see a bounce and may need to retest. But yeah, I think everything's priced in. The uncertainty is priced in massively because we've had big drops. In fact, you know, the best performing indices on the ones I look at here is the FTSE, because of course oil and gas are there. It's only down 9.3%. compared to like one of the biggest, Russell is down 30%.
NASDAQ, yeah, a lot of that though is the currency, isn't it?
Yeah.
The currency was 135 to the dollar, now it's 126, so it's gone down by sort of 6 or 7%. So if you adjust for that, actually it takes some of the outperformance. But I think you raise a great point, because you know, the consumer isn't actually in that difficult a position, because I think the market has arbitrarily decided, right, okay, the consumer's a homogeneous mass and the cost of living crisis is going to hit all areas of the consumer, and that's going to mean everybody's going to retrench and nobody's going to spend on anything. Well, that's actually not happening, because people are still going on holidays, we've talked about. They're still going out with experiences. You try and flip in, go to a concert like, you know, a run of rock festivals or Nebworth or anybody like that, you know, you're not going to be able to get an invite. All the major sporting events, look at the Football League, you know, it's absolutely rammed because people are still spending. And again, you look at the worst parts of the US retail at the moment, yeah? And what people have been saying, actually, yes, we haven't been selling as many sort of sofas and big ticket home items and this sort of stuff. But actually, all the major retailers, even the ones who have negatives, have said, people are going out, they're going back to the office, and we're still seeing, you know, people demand for dresses and also for cosmetics. And that's really interesting, because there was, you know, one of the companies that I've talked about, Revolution Beauty, and the shares have been badly battered over the last sort of like 3 or 4 months, back to sort of like less than £1.10. Well, one of its sort of like another challenger, affordable quality cosmetics brand Warpaint in the UK, which has also got US interest, came out with some strong results 2 or 3 weeks ago. But last week you had Elf Cosmetics in the States, which is a really strong brand, a bit like Revolution Beauty, i.e. that just has premium quality cosmetics at affordable prices for the mass market, mass beauty market. And it came out with fantastic results and has got a really optimistic outlook of sort of like double-digit like-for-like growth. And all I was saying is that, you know, don't treat the consumer as one homogeneous mass.
Yeah.
And look at where spend is shifting into, you know, it's gone from certain areas into other sort of areas. And that's going to sort of like also underpin the wider economy. So when it comes to this hard recession, as you say, you know, when we came to look at the great financial crisis, I can't remember what unemployment was, but we're at less than 4% in the UK, and it's, and the labour market's even tighter in the US. And it's rare that you get a long, deep, protracted recession on such high and strong labour markets, because people are still earning and they still want to go out, you know, and enjoy themselves. So I think that's good.
But do you know what? Two results of this week was telling, actually. I mean, Marks and Spencer said they don't think they're going to be affected by, you know, inflation that much, because their customer, you know, are not the kind of people who are low income. And of course, we get a lot of mass media news about low income families suffering. And of course, it's going to be hard on the low income families. But you've got to look at, do you own shares in a company that rely on that low-income bracket? If you don't worry so much. If people have disposable income, they'll still go out and do, you know, cinema or escape rooms, but even pets at home. Pets at Home had great figures out, and they're saying that people won't cut back on pet spending, because, and you know, unless it's a choice between feeding your kids or the dog, fair enough, they will. But generally, their customer is not like that. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know how many companies are listed that rely on the low-income families, but, you know, you've got to be careful. It's, like I said, most stuff I'm into, I don't think it's being massively affected at all, you know. So, and like I said,
so when it comes to sort of like investment strategy, you know, obviously, if you're going to go consumer facing, you go to sort of like, you know, those areas that spend is shifting into. into, but also into sort of like, you know, resilience areas that is really non-discretionary. And we had one we've talked about, which has done really well. And I know it's been a home run for most of the shareholders and investors who have sort of followed it, is Bellascura, you know, the portable oxygen concentrator for the medical. And yes, the shares have bounced up from around about, you know, sort of, well, they're listed about 45 and they hit over a pound, and I can't remember what they are now. Probably around about a similar sort of level, 86p, etc. So they're still well above what you know where they were. And what they basically filed and got, you know, approved. There's three more patents to add to their sort of treasure trove of IPR now at 30 patents world, and that just strengthens all of their, you know, effectively barriers to entry into their, you know, their next generation portable oxygen concentrators, which are used for sort of COPD and, you know, lung disease and this sort of stuff, but also long COVID it can be used for. And you know, I mean, on the back of that, getting three patents, the house broker upgraded its numbers going forward in terms of sales and also margins, etc., and profitability. And they reckon the shares are worth £2 a share. So there's plenty of upside. And I mean, I've done it on a 15 times EBITDA using their numbers, and I get to 240. So I think it's a reasonable valuation that they've actually got. But it just shows you such that that's non-discretionary, because it serves those people, patients who, you know, basically need, you know, medical treatment. So that's a good area, you know, to be in.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what I just covered as well? As a bit of a cross promote for you there, you were chatting to Gervais Williams.
Oh yeah, Gervais Williams, superstar rockstar fund manager.
Very intelligent guy. You can almost hear his brain whirring, you know. And he covered loads of stocks of interest to me. Was Truefin, which he really likes. I didn't know that he bought that for Satarga for a pound. I didn't know that. But I did know that now Lloyds have gone, you know, they had their initial chat with Lloyds and the commercial, you know, sort of feelings with them. And it was extended by 6 months, because initially it was a 6 month deal kind of thing, trial deal. And then trial was extended by another 6 months. And that's because they went further into using their platform for more areas in Lloyds. But what of interest, I think, to, you know, people watching this was Gervais is saying he sees institutions, and he would know, of course, because he's part of that area there. He sees more interest in small microcap stocks going forward now from institutions because they've been so heavily hit, which is very interesting. And it doesn't take a lot of liquidity to move small microcap stocks. So if that does happen, and like you said, you know, in the Dash for Cash crash, he said, you know, they rebounded a lot quicker and faster and bigger than, obviously, bigger caps. So it'll be interesting to see if that happens, because loads of them have been massively oversold. Like, well, you mentioned Purple Bricks there. No, it's now on, what is it? The cash level is pretty much is there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the cash level, it said, is £43 million, and the market cap is only 53. I mean, you know, when you look at that, it just is like crazy. And it's delivering 70 million of sales. So, you know, I mean, it's just as like ridiculous.
And what's interesting, in real world, because I'm literally signed up to Zoopla, Rightmove, on the market, and there are more properties coming online. That will help them, of course, because a lot of time it's been supply. Yes. And I've seen, literally, we went through a period about a few months back where I checked to see if I was still registered on some of these apps, because there's no properties coming through. Now I'm getting literally two or three a day on each platform. So it's starting to ease up, and that will help, of course, a lot of these...
we've already said high prices cure high prices. And, Rightmove said house prices hit another record in April. We're up 10% like for like. And that's consistent with Nationwide and the Halifax. So as prices move up, and you do get a cost of living crisis, if you do have people who basically have overstretched themselves and need to actually sell that property to pay off some debts or create a bit of capital, or even decide, I want a life change. I'm going to go traveling. I'm going to go for 2 years. I've earned enough money on the old house market, you know, so I'm actually going to go and enjoy myself. And so those kind of people will start, you know, selling, because there's still a lot of big demand. I mean, you look at those estate agents, and they're saying they have 20 or 30 views still for certain properties out in the southeast.
Well, do you know what? I was talked to Jason Tebb, of course, of On the Market, and he was saying, yeah, there's a huge amount of demand out there. The supply, you know, is a bottleneck, but it's starting to ease up. And I think, you know, like going back to Peter Lynch, what up on Wall Street about behavioral finance? What are you doing? Think about your behavior. And right now, I mean, in about a year's time or a year and a half, we have to move into catchment for my youngest son. And I'm thinking right now, is the housing market close to the top here? Probably is. And I'm thinking, shall we sell
prices.
Now?
Prices, yes. I would agree. Yeah.
And I'm thinking, shall we sell now, rent a place, and then wait for, you know, because get the best price? And I'm thinking a lot of people are thinking that. And, you know, it's right now you're seeing a lot more properties come online. So whether they're worrying about higher mortgage rates because they won't be able to afford it, or whether they're thinking, let's get the best price now, and then we can rent for a while and hopefully buy when if they soften up a bit in the future, you know, because there's more supply coming. So, yeah, and like I said, people mustn't confuse. This will help portals and especially Purple Brick because just the supply coming on the market helps.
Yeah, yeah. And also, you know, let's be clear about it. There's been a shortage, we've talked about, of properties coming on. And therefore, the number of transactions over the last 6 to 12 months has actually fallen, particularly in the sort of the existing properties, not in so much in new properties because they are trying to ramp up new property projects. But as you start getting more transactions and more people moving houses because the prices come down and there's more sellers on the market, but there's still sort of strong demand, that's going to play to people like, you know, Lords Group Trader, who came out with inline results, or strong results, and a positive outlook. And say, yes, 80% of their business is repair, maintenance, and improvements of sort of commercial, of properties, residential properties. But there's also sort of 20% on the new build, et cetera. And therefore, it's going to continue, you know, helping them. And their biggest problem is not, it's absolutely not demand. Mm. I mean, it's basically getting supply. And at the moment, you know, they're having difficulty because of China. China's struggling to be able to produce, you know, pumps for which then go into manufacturers of boilers like your Baxi and Worcester Bosch and people like that. And then that has a knock-on effect that, you know, in their heating and plumbing division, they can't get enough boilers that they want to basically install for people. So their biggest problem is supply chain and input cost inflation. It's absolutely not demand. I mean, their demand is, their order books are as full as everybody else's. Wick said it this week. Travis Perkins has said it in the past. They've got full order books. So, you know, you could look at it. And again, coming back to that big picture, have we really, we've built in too much darkness into the stock market that is unjustified? Because, yes, I think you and I mean, I've been saying for some time that the house prices will come off once you get more supply, because they're a bit artificial because they've been squeezed up. It's like stock market, more demand, less supply, moves the prices. But frankly, it's going to be healthy if there is a number of bigger supply, because it will take off some of the edge and improve, you know, the sort of number of transactions. And anybody going into an existing property wants to change it up, don't they? I mean, basically, they put in a new bathroom, kitchen, and this sort of stuff. So, you know, their outlook is strong and consistent with certainly how I do. And again, I point, it's a bit like Revolution Beauty, because the shares have come off and they're trading on around about, I think it's about 6.5 times EBITDA, which is just frankly nuts for, you know, a quality business that has been, you know, growing at sort of twice the rate of the market. I mean, Travis Perkins, when you look at it sort of like on a like-for-like sales basis, did 10% incremental growth compared to 2019. But Lords Group Trading on a like-for-like basis doesn't have a 20%. So when you look at it on that, then they're winning market share. They've got an entrepreneurial management team. And, you know, I mean, they're knocking the ball out of the park and they have really full order books. So, you know, that's really just stick with your winners. And it's like going to the, I mean, I don't know if you bet on the GGs. I don't, sort of like, but if you go up to the, if you decide to go to the, you know, the Ascot or something like that, or go watch the Derby, you tend to bet on the favourites, the ones who have been, you know, doing well. And these guys have been doing well for 20 years. So, you know, you're crazy to bet against them.
Let me ask you a macro question. You mentioned China there, and this is an issue, of course, the supply chain, because they have this zero COVID policy. They had a big meeting, didn't they? A financial meeting recently.
Yes, President Xi.
Yeah, saying that we've got to kickstart the economy. So what will be the impact of China restarting? Because it'll take a while, of course, to ease up these supply chains, so much products made in China. But also, they're not a
This is a leading question, isn't it?
This is
feeding meat to the tiger. This is
So first of all, let's say that the ease up supply chains, so people get their products more, and so that'll help. But also, there's the worry on the oil because they're a net importer of oil. They don't produce oil. So what do you think would be net the effect of China opening back up? Will it hit energy prices, or will it help just the economies of the world? It's hard to weigh that up, isn't it? Because the demand for their oil will go up, globally.
Stock market will rocket, mate. We'll go up 10, 15, 20% in a nanosecond. And the reason why I say that is that the world's inflation problems will start to be solved. People will not only thinking, actually, have we reached peak inflation? We have definitely reached peak inflation, because that manufacturing breadbasket of the world will then turn back on and we'll start seeing supply chains free up. We'll start seeing more cash coming back into companies, because let's be clear about it, most sensible businesses have built up a lot of inventory, because of the extended supply chains, etc. And so on that basis, they'll be able to turn that working capital into immediate cash. But equally, that whole relief rally of, God, inflation is not going to the moon, therefore central banks can back off or haven't got to raise as fast. We haven't got to normalize as steeply. Oh, yeah, no, that will be great. And yes, it might well be that they start taking, importing more oil and this sort of stuff. But frankly, that's going to be at the margin. We'll sort that one out, It's going to be a huge inflation relief rally.
Yeah. Well, I suppose there's a lot of the problem, I suppose, in Europe is not the problem with the amount of oil or gas, is it? It's just literally they try not to buy it from Russia. Now, China will have no problems buying it from Russia. So,
I hope you're right. I mean, we did have President Xi. I mean, he said basically it's unsustainable, this zero COVID policy, which means it's going to change. I mean,
we all knew that. We all knew that a long time ago. Get on with it. Mm. It's a cold now, pretty much. Move on. Cool. What's next?
The other side of the coin when it comes to sort of like, stock selection, etc. We've talked about that on the consumer side, but, equally go for the sort of the areas that are sort of like non-discretionary, or alternatively, look at those companies that are helping other businesses improve their efficiencies, productivity, and quality of service, and are doing all that. And that comes to one of my just latest purchases, which has come a long way off, basically. It's a company called Active Ops, which is a ticker AOM, and it listed on the stock market last year at about 168, went up high, and then is now trading at 65p, amazingly enough. As of today, it's about sort of break-even profitability. It would be profitable if it decided it wasn't going to grow as fast, but it is actually investing in its top line. And it basically does sort of like AI data, real-time analytics, so to help effectively corporates, particularly the finance community, improve their management of their people, sort of like used to be, it's originated out of sort of the call centers, I believe, or the large big back offices. And so what it does is it basically helps the scheduling and the productivity management of that staff. But it doesn't just have that. That's where it was sort of born. It's also put on a sort of like looking at the insights, and this is all done in real time to maximize the the productivity of their workforces, etc. It's also put on some benchmarking data across the industries to help people fine tune and improve it. And then it's also, which it got a bit of stick at the time to a certain extent, but it also in real time monitors how employees are working. So it did get a bit of a rap, I think, unfairly because of spying. But
so
it does help.
So this is the company you hold, is it?
Yeah, no, it's my last purchase. I've got no cash now. It was only half a position.
So what's the ticker on that again?
AOM. It's basically Active Ops. And they're a software. They've got ARR around about 20 mil. Market cap is, 47, 48 mil. But they've got about 5 million of cash. So, when you look at that against ARR, they're not much more than 2x. But when you look at it on forward sales, I think they're predicted to do sort of 24. So they're on about 1.8 times sales. And as I say, they've been growing the top line at sort of 10, 15, 20%. And I expect them to be doing that because, you know, their customers are, you know, are all the sort of the finance guys. So they've got the banks, insurance, and, you know, sort of like the business process outsourcers. A bit like you've got sort of Nationwide, TD Bank, you've got Anthem, etc. So there's a huge addressable market for this, and they really drive, say, the efficiency, productivity, and quality of service of all these back office. And the products are largely sold through value-added resellers, software guys. So your consultants like PwC, KPMG, and Bearing Point, and they have about 80 customers worldwide in the UK and Ireland, Australia, the US. I think the US actually is their fastest growing, and in South Africa and India. So they're on a big track record. It's a huge addressable market for their particular sector. Is about 1.2 billion, growing about 19% per annum. And as I say, it drives efficiencies, productivities of workforce management, real time scheduling, benchmarking, and monitoring employees. And in this hybrid world, where we're still going to have people working at home 2 or 3 days a week, then it's perfect for these institutions. And it isn't. And when I say, you know, when it comes to sort of like if we go through a tougher period, one, a lot of the financial community have to, it's non-discretionary for them, have to actually invest in this type of technology because they can't compete against fintech or insurtech. Their competitors, because their cost base, they have to get their cost base down. They have to improve their, you know, the quality of service. And they've got a lot of these financial institutions have got really complex systems. So this is a really cloud, you know, sort of native product that reduces people's costs and allows them go into to unify and to integrate their systems and go into the 22nd century. So, you know, they seem to be in a nice place at the right time, and the shares have come off. It doesn't mean they won't come off further. Yeah. But I just saw a point and I just thought, okay, well, this looks good value that I'm happy to hold for 3 to 5 years and let's see how they get on.
When did you buy those then?
About 2 weeks ago.
People who bought those early, they've come off a lot, haven't they, from the IPO.
£2.05.
It's a bit of
they're really
a
quality. Yeah, it's real quality. You know, software trading at a really good price, and they've got no need to raise any cash. And I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, the share price will either turn because of their results and their top line is growing, and you'll see that operating leverage expand on the actual margins, which will take some time. Or alternatively, somebody will buy them because they're really sort of like a bit of a crown jewel piece of software, a nibble value. I mean, you could buy them for 50 million quid. I mean, it just is a joke, you know, for this type of customer base and software. And, you know, their CEO seems to be doing a absolutely terrific job. So, you know, I'd still carry on back. One of these entrepreneurial founders who have demonstrated what they can do, you know, you're crazy not to back them. Richard Jeffrey, the CFO founder. And as I say, I mean, I've run the numbers. And as I say, it's, you know, basically it's a SaaS business going about 10% per annum with 80% gross margins. I think should be valued at 3 to 5 times sales, which works out about a pound to 170 a share, which seems like a bit of a bargain for long-term investors like me who are relatively risk tolerant can take the any of the volatility.
Yeah. So do they give any figures in their trading update? I see, you know, interim's 11.4 million revenue there, but
I think the ARR is just below, you know, 20 mil, which is, you know, I mean, frankly, and that's growing at 10, 15, 20%. Let's be clear, if a big software guy in this area wanted to buy them, then they could increase the geographical footprint enormously. I mean, the amount of, you know, sales synergies they would get out of it is hugely. And we've got to remember this is 80% gross margin. So
I think you've timed your cash level perfectly, really. You've scaled in nicely over the last few,
I don't know about that, but I bought I bought stuff that's sort of like being sold off and stuff like that. I mean, it's like anything to a certain extent.
But these markets, like you say, you think you've got a close to a good valuation, but markets always oversell, don't they? And so you can never pick a bottom. Unless you're buying every day a share, you can't actually get the good...
I agree.
But what you do get, generally, when a market oversells, it has that technical bounce, doesn't it? Retraces very quickly back up. And then it goes sideways for a while and goes back up again when more confirmation happens. So, yeah, I think the markets... I mean, even look at, say, the S&P, you know, it's bounced a little in the last few days because people have seen it have oversold a bit. So, it's interesting. Okay, what's next, Paulie?
As I say, coming back to backing sort of like, you know, surefire winners, I mean, you know, Equals, for instance, came out with their trading update and they just knocked the ball out of the park saying that, you know, they'd seen 85% like-for-like growth currently this year, which is just absolutely fantastic, and that's actually on a revenue per day accelerated just recently, as well as the consumer has started to go on holidays, and that sort of helped them as well. So the direction of travel is up for these guys, and they're winning. Most of that growth is coming from most of it's coming from B2B, but in the larger side in the corporates, because they've built this platform that really helps, you know, small, medium-sized enterprises, but is equally as resilient for larger corporates. And it's those guys who are coming on board. And they're basically, what they've decided to do is to adopt a sort of land and expand strategy with these guys, bring them on at good sort of attractive for them, very, very tight pricing, and then sell more services into them at higher value at a later date. So what's happened is that you've got a mix effect that's reducing the gross margin, which is just less than 50% now overall. But frankly, the long-term value of these customers could be hugely significant as they add more services and they start readjusting the actual price going forward. So they're using it as effectively to win more business. And it's really, really driving the top line because the service quality wrap, because they do forwards and, you know, foreign exchange on the back of it, onto their straight-through processing platform for Forex payments is a winning strategy. So they're really grabbing a lot of market share from the banks. And it just says to me everything. The long-term value of this business has increased materially and will continue to increase. But the share price hasn't really moved a great deal. I mean, you still look at it and it's 86p and people saying, well, okay, well, it's come a long way from 25p.
Yeah, yeah.
But essentially, that's still a real drop in the ocean. You know, this could get to, significantly, he's still trading at less than about 2.5 times sales, whereas, you know, these kind of fintech high grow businesses should be at sort of 5 times sales easy. So you could, I could easily see this over £1.50. In fact, my fair value is £1.38, and all the other brokers have pushed theirs up to, I think, Canaccord are on about 120 or something like 125 or something like that. So we're all round about. And Simon Thompson at Vesta Chronicle, I think he's on 120 or 130 as well. So, you know, it's come a long way, but there's still significant value. And the key bit with these new customers, large corporates being brought on board, the value is going to come through in the future as they put more higher margin services onto those corporates because they want to take them because this is a very, very resilient and flexible platform.
Just look at the chart there. It's literally knocking its head on 90 pence pretty much. And if it breaks that, that seems a bit of a resistance there.
Regardless of the short term technical stuff, I just think, you know, it should be valued at over a pound already, but. Yeah. But frankly, I'm a long-term investor. I'm happy to hold, and they've got a winning product there, not only on the technical stack but also on the service wrap, and the strategy is actually working a treat. And what was quite interesting is the whole being a bunch of directors have bought after that trading update, so around about 85, 86p they've been added, including the finance director.
People try and tell me about charts. I always look at charts, right? But I never look at charts on what to buy. I look at them as a sort of reference to see, you know, where the share price has been, where it's at. Is it, you know, massively oversold or whatever? Or is it massively overbought sometimes? Because it just helps timing a little bit, you know. But you should unless you're a trader, you should never rely on charts as an investor. But it does help to have a bit of chart knowledge, I think, you know, sometimes. Yeah, so in fact, one of the stocks I held had financial results out, which is GTEC Holdings. And this is a story of the future, really. And it's very interesting, actually, because if you look at it, their software as a service kind of thing, geospatial, geoscience data, all that stuff, it's doing okay. Like, it grew by 20% to 4.3 million. Order book grew 25%. They have net cash of five million. They use about 800K in cash, so they've got plenty of cash there. And they'll probably need that because, you know, these hydrogen hubs, they've gone from a software as a service pretty much provider to actually now taking stakes in hydrogen hubs, which is, I was watching an interview with the CEO, Jonathan. He said, listen, it's good business software as a service, but you've got to keep landing new contracts. Now, being part of a developer of hydrogen hubs, as long as you're producing those hydrogen, you get money. So it's a long-term, you know, recurring revenue, very long-term. And I just think at the moment, and I always look at things, when I look at companies, I have about 9 filters in a, I mean, most companies don't fit all 9, but one of the filters, apart from I initially look at, you know, growth, value, and then profit or cash to profit, and then one of the next filters is mega trend or trend. Are they in a big trend, a growing end markets, all that? And at the moment, I see energy, there's no bigger trend, especially the decarbonisation of energy, huge, you know, massive. I mean, everything's changing, and it's been speeding up because of Ukraine and people, the reliance on Russian oil and gas. And just looking at the figures on decarbonisation, it's crazy, really, because this was brought up. So 2022, energy investment could total as much as 13% of global GDP. That's the highest level ever. To require global net zero, $1 to $2 trillion per year is needed in investment. And there are lots of governments accelerating this investment as well. As the EU quadrupled its green hydrogen supply target to 75 gigawatts by 2030, half of which will be supplied by imported hydrogen. They've also pledged to fast-track the market. UK government as well doubled their target and the speed at which they get there. GTEC is to produce 500 megawatts of green hydrogen by 2030. Now, they've announced 2 projects already, and they probably make up a 10% of that target. But the brokers are saying, if you look at 10 tonnes of hydrogen being produced, that'll generate 6 million in revenue for GTEC, EBITDA about 2 million each. So put those together, that's 12 million of revenue, 4 million EBITDA, that's about a tenth of what they hope to get. And they've got, of course, deals with SGN and Evershot Rail, so big companies, Highlands Council. But it's a story of the future, because these things take a while to get going, you know. So in the meantime, you know, the software as a service business will tick it over nicely. But again, it's just having patience, because I think it's going to be huge, this energy transition. You know, I think everyone should have a bit of exposure to some kind of new energy or some kind of energy there in their portfolio, because it's a massive trend. There's a huge amounts of money going into it. And it'll continue, I think, you know. All the governments have set these, you know, hard stop dates pretty much, to which they hope to achieve certain targets. And so the investment and the momentum, it will build, you know. So it's worth having that. In these markets, it's, you know, you may not think that is a mega trend, but it is a mega trend, and I think it's worth getting.
I think you're right. The key when you adopt that and you've got these mega trends is to go for the pinch points, is to go for those areas that are niche, small cap, and a small cap can actually have a strong USP. I, you know, the area that I'm in is on renewables, which is basically Northbridge, you know, the Crestchicken, and they've got their AGM, and I'm hoping to hear some positive news in about 2 or 3 weeks' time, etc. I'll be interviewing the CEO, or sorry, say the exec chairman, Peter Harris, again, and that Crestchick business is absolutely flying, not only because of, you know, grid stability because of the renewables being added to it and having to sort of do all that testing, but also the growth in data centers. And we saw that with Nvidia's results only yesterday. And they're seeing 80% increase in data center, you know, sort of like, you know, chips and stuff.
Yeah.
And that just says to me, they're being driven by 2 huge, you know, sort of secular growth trends. And they're a small business in a very, very niche-y, pinch point part of that whole area. So when it comes to sort of these huge sort of like, you know, tailwinds, that are going to be mega multi-decade drivers, then when you go for small caps in it, you know, it's in like energy, for instance, if you're going to avoid, you know, you avoid the Shells and the BPs who are obviously big boys in that sort of stuff, but go for the pinch points, go for those areas that they have a real discrete, you know, advantage, because they're not going to compete against people on a cost of capital. They have to compete it on a tech front.
Absolutely.
Another one which came out with results, which has been bombed out unfairly, in my view, is Venture Life, and they came out with good, strong, you know, sort of like 2021 results. When I say good and strong, I mean certainly on the second half. And when you look at it on a pro forma basis for sort of like the second half of last year, they did a run rate of nearly 8 million pound EBITDA, so 7.9 million pound, over 20% margin. So, you know, sort of, it was 37.8 million pound on the turnover. And, you know, when you look at that through that lens, for the broker estimates, et cetera, with Singers, they're on a sort of 40.1 for this year and 8.2. So, you know, they really have to not got that much growth for this year to hit their particular numbers. So they look pretty much, you know, sort of underpinned. And, you know, on that basis, then the shares are trading at sort of less than a 5.5 times EBITDA. And you look at it, and that's just so cheap for an OTC healthcare products business that is growing organically at sort of 10% and also putting acquisition growth of another 10% per annum on it. And these things should be going, should be sold for, I mean, 15 times EBITDA. So, you know, it's not surprising people like Simon Thompson who like it, he reiterated his strong buy on it at sort of a pound. And Singers are on about 66p for a conservative target price. And I mean, I haven't got any cash, but my after the results, my two daughters bought some shares in Venture Life, because I mean, they're just, you know, you've got a lot of resilience, you've got a lot of niche brands there that people will keep and keep on using, and they have a lot of levers to pull in terms of supply chain. They're still difficult to get raw materials, and there's on input cost inflation, but they'll manage it. They've managed it through sort of stock. And they've got some good growth drivers with China reopening, et cetera. That should be a good opportunity for them. And then they've got expansion, obviously, in places like Europe. And if there's a nice, attractive acquisition which comes out through the, you know, sort of through the carnage of what's been happening on the stock markets, then they've got the firepower to pick that up. So it all seems to be moving in the right direction. And when you look at the shares, they're just trading at ridiculously low value.
Yeah,
I'm surprised if somebody buys them, actually.
That's another example. If the fundamentals are good, and just check out the chart there, you think, okay, listen, it hit a low of pretty much 26 pence in December. It rallied a bit, come back down, retested, but, you know, higher low than that, 30 pence. And now it's at that 33 level. So it's almost going, hopefully you'll see it now, exhausted sellers there. So it'll just go sideways for a while. It's close to 200-day moving averages coming down to meet the British price. And it'll pop above that. So it's technically, you know, if scaling in here is a good idea, if the fundamentals are good, you know, it really is. So
I mean, the other ones on sort of the healthcare worth mentioning is, and just certainly on it comes to sort of like a major bit of news flow, is that there's a very large sort of, you know, American industry conference in June to cover sort of like kidney transplant technology, donors, etc. And Verici DX, who we've talked about, will be presenting the final data from their validation studies there in June. And I'm hoping to catch up with CEO Sarah Barrington at that. And they released their prelims about 10 days ago, which is really just saying everything is on track and reinforcing that they got that their first test, which is the a diagnostic to see the acceptance level of a patient with actual a donor, etc., post transplant, that has, you know, shown significantly better efficacy than the current technology, current best in class technology. So that really points to, when they do release the final data, you'll see some really good numbers there. And likewise, they've got this the prognostic, which does a predictive way for the acceptance of donors into transplant patients. That data should be coming out fairly soon as well, and that'll probably be available in June. So I wanted to raise, you know, just to sort of like a you know, alert people that we're going to have some big news coming from Verici, and the shares are just like ridiculously low because they've just sold off with sentiment, and they look great value to a certain extent. The balance sheet is absolutely solid. They've got plenty of cash. Yeah. They should have first sales this year. And if they've got, and I think they've got best in class technology. And we've always said with healthcare, you've got to go with best in class technology in these type of areas, and they have it.
But you know what? No, a couple of my filters I look at as well. USP is one of the things I look at, and also scalability. Now they've got both that. You may need some patience. That's all. But like I said, that's the kind of company. Where are they? What are they at? 40 odd million market cap, and. Yeah. When you realise where they can be, you know, that's got massive scalability from this level, isn't it, you know?
Oh, absolutely huge, yeah, yeah. No, totally.
But you've got patience, that's it. It takes time and patience. And if you want to have big winners, you've got to have a bit of patience. You know, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and I think Singers have got a sort of conservative valuation of, I think it was 76p when I last saw, after the, you know, the prelims. 24. But we could see that rise significantly given that the quality of the actual technology that they have. And it's a platform. This isn't just test. It's a platform. It's a suite of sort of tests that will carry on, you know, generating new products and helping other people generate. You know, there's lots of licensing revenue associated with it as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Another company with lots of licensing, you know, opportunities is Avacta. And they came out that, you know, they said a few days ago that their R&D programs are moving, you know, full tilt. I mean, they've got two major big platforms. They've got the precision platform, which is the targeted chemotherapy, and they've also got the Affimer platform, which does sort of diagnostics and therapeutics. And it was on that side that they came out with news. One of their joint venture partners, Dai Wong Pharmaceuticals, that joint venture, Affiex, said that you know, it was basically expanding its work with a major sort of biopharma manufacturer, GenScript, who was actually also going to be investing later on into that particular joint venture, and it met a major endpoint goal in its development of stem cell technology. And it's really novel because what they're using, the Affimers are a bit like antibodies, but they're a bit more resilient, smaller, etc. And what it does with these stem cell technology, gene therapy, is that it uses Dai Wong's platform to develop the actual stem cell, the therapy, the cell therapeutic, etc. And when you take out that, you know, the actual on a blood draw or the cells from a patient, you take it out, you know, into the lab, you then add in the Affimers to it. And what then happens when you put it back into the actual patients, their technology gives you therapeutic benefits, and the Affimer effectively modulates or reduces the potential immunotherapy response of that particular treatment. So it's a win-win situation. And, you know, that's the Affimer technology is demonstrate that it works. And what that means that you should be able to use these Affimers in the same place for other gene therapies in multiple areas. And so it really opens a huge door. I mean, this is like a $16 billion market in potential, you know, sort of future gene therapies. And once you've demonstrated it once, the Affimer works, you should be able to be demonstrated again in lots of others. So that's a real big sort of data point. And then, you know, there'll be another big data point coming sometime in the summer. We're going to have that first cut of the phase one data for their lead clinical trial drug, the prodoxorubicin. And looking at the toxicity and the safety and maybe even a bit of efficacy data coming out of it. So I'm really optimistic about that. So there's lots of big potential value inflection points coming through. But I thought it was worth it just, again, alerting investors that it looked quite a sort of like a nondescript sort of like announcement. Actually, is really important because, again, it sort of rubber stamps the efficacy of the Affimer platform alongside the strength of the precision platform.
Yeah, look at that. It's rallied strongly recently, is it? It did hit 39 pence.
That was ridiculous. Like, I mean, that was absolutely just crazy.
But oddly, that 39 pence was literally, if you look back at when they announced the collaboration on COVID-19 testing back in April 8th, 2020, It broke up amongst that. It came back to retest that. And so you can look back at that level and think, OK, that's an interesting level. But, yeah, it's gone under 39 pence.
And I think the big picture you raise is fabulous, because what that means, if you are going to, you know, invest in innovative, small-cap businesses, then you've got to be able to take the volatility. And we talk about it quite a lot. But that just shows you, like with Verici, there's massive volatility. Like with Active Ops, there's massive volatility in these. Yeah. And how many, over my investment career, I've had probably hundreds of instances where a share price after I've bought it is down 50, 60, 70%. And you're not feeling great. But frankly, if you still believe in the fundamentals and the science and the business should do, you hold on to it. And then ultimately, you know, not in every single instance, but then come back strongly and you make two or three times. I mean, I just look at it sort of like, you know, with Equals, et cetera. When I first bought that, I bought it about 30p. It then went down to bottom of about 20p or 21p, stayed there for a few months, for about 6 months, and has steadily worked its way up to 85, and it's still undervalued. So it's easy. You and I have got a bit of experience, and we've got sort of broad shoulders, and we're used to the volatility, and we can just about handle it. But emotionally wise, for most investors, if you're going to go into this area, which can be highly rewarding, you know, you just got to be prepared that it's going to throw a few cards at you that, frankly, your emotional intelligence needs to be able to deal with.
It's hard, and I said the other day on Twitter, I said bear market's one of the best times to get, you know, really good valued stocks that are improving. And in fact, it's a famous quote from Charlie Munger, isn't it? It said, if you can't stomach a 50% declines in your investment, you will get mediocre returns you deserve. Guys, even the big companies, Amazon, Facebook, they've all had Tesla and all that kind of, they've all had massive drawdowns. If you look back at the chart, it hasn't always been up, some of them. And how many people were held through all of that? You know, not many people would have held. Amazon stock was so volatile in the early days. So, but the returns over time, phenomenal, you know. So, yeah, you've got to expect the volatility in small caps. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's quite, I think I might use a different word than volatility. It's almost like petrified sort of, terrifying type of roller coaster, isn't it? That's what it is. Yeah, yeah. And as long as you prepare, as long as you can see the fundamentals behind it and you've got a thick skin and you're prepared to take that pain, then the pain will reward you a lot. But there is a lot of emotional
Exactly. So sometimes, you know, if you're going over the roller coaster analogy, I said, you actually jump out of a roller coaster when it's going down a hill. You don't. You stay in.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you know it's going to go back up. It's fine, you know.
Yes. I would remember that, Justin. Yeah. That is a brilliant analogy.
Stay on the ride. Enjoy the ride to the end until they say, right, get off.
Well, I don't know if you enjoy it. It could be terrifying, right. That is a fabulous. Yeah. I like that a lot. Thank you.
Marvellous. Anything else all done?
No, we're all done, yeah. I mean, we've got, lots of good news flow, and I would point to investors, watch out closely. I mean, I'd say I'm away for a week, and I hope they don't come out with it, but we've got Northbridge's AGM coming up in a couple of weeks, which is already said, and then we've got, obviously, Verici, and I think that's going to be a major, major, you know, sort of like data point, so...
I'm looking forward to the final results on my biggest holding, XP Factory. They said late May. It doesn't get any later than this. It's like two more days left next week.
No, I'll tell you what that is, mate. I'll tell you what that is. I'll bet you it's nothing to do with... They've got their numbers sorted, but it's basically... Yeah. I bet you it's to do with their auditor, can't get staff.
Oh, yes, because there's been loads of issues with auditors, isn't
there? I've heard it all throughout. And so if it is delaying it, I would suggest with investors, don't get spooked, because it is actually happening right across the patch. Auditors, they're really struggling to get the staff to sign off on the audits at the moment.
They're holding back because very soon they're going to announce the opening of Oxford Street, which is going to be the flagship store. It's like 15,000 square foot right in Oxford Street. They own that and operate that. And it's going to be, they said it's going to be in Q2? Yeah, Q2. So hopefully they'll have an announcement on that as well.
Maybe. And I presume you're going to go there and throw a few axes,
yeah,
are you?
Yeah. Well, I promised, the CEO promised me that we're going to go there with a couple of people. We're going to do the axe throwing stuff. And if the share price is down...
Take a few videos as well, please. Yeah. Stick them online. I'd love to see it.
Yeah. If the share price drops, then he's better stand outside the cage, because he'll be in
trouble. Do your tonto. Woo! You know,
yeah,
pressure.
Exactly. Marvellous stuff. We'll enjoy the West Wales, and I'll enjoy the canal boat. Very slow, sedentary, looking at the market.
Are you on holiday as well, are you?
Yeah, I'm going on a canal boat, which is very odd.
Next week?
Yeah.
Next week as well? Wow, okay, yeah, have a great time. Look, where are you going? Oxford or
canal
Birmingham.
Boat somewhere. The wife has booked a canal boat, quite left field for us as a holiday. I don't know.
No. Do you know
from.
Where it is? Where are you going?
Yeah, I think it's going to. What did she say? I don't know. I've got to look at a video how to drive a canal boat. First of all, but I think it's going from Wiltshire to Bath.
Lovely, fantastic. Okay, we'll have a great time. All right, mate.
Well,
Take care.
I'll give you a report on that. Whether it's worth doing.
Take care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.